Our meeting is very straightforward. We're here to talk tonight about the closing of Diablo Canyon, about the academic program in the district, and how that closing may affect that whole thing. We're going to have a presentation first by our panelists, Dr. Prater, Kimberly, and Ryan. And we'll follow that by hearing from you. Please, if you would like to speak tonight, we want to encourage you to speak. There are forms available at the back. They look like this. Please fill it out with your name and the subject you would like to speak to on this whole thing. They will bring those eventually up to Kim and I, and we will call you in the order that we receive them. There's also, for anybody that's interested and needs it, there's a translator here tonight that can translate everything. And most importantly, the lavatories are out this door and to the right. I think at this point, I will turn it over to Dr. Prater.
Thank you, Dave. I just want to start by saying thank you for coming tonight. It shows, it shows a level of care in the Los Osos community for our schools and a level of care for our school district. We all believe deeply that the quality of our schools is directly connected to the quality of our communities. And so coming here tonight is the first step of many steps to get to understand the scope and the overall context that we're existing in as a result of the closure of the Diablo Canyon Nuclear Power Plant. I would like to, if I could, start off by saying that when we held our first forum last week at Laguna Middle School, there was, because it was our first go around, I think there was an assumption that somehow tonight I would have a level of detail on these programmatic cuts, that we would have a response from the community based on those reductions that have been decided upon. And that's, I just want to be real clear, that's really not the purpose of tonight. I don't have that in my secret bag over here. In fact, the purpose of this evening is really to provide to you the basic information that we are working with, that we don't have all the facts just yet. We're working with preliminary information, and we're speculating and projecting the impact it will have on us. So the purpose of tonight is to get in front of this as early on as possible and get your feedback on that and begin the conversation. So we'll hold three of these forums, Laguna Middle School last week, Los Osos tonight, next Wednesday out at Del Mar in Morro Bay. We will also be meeting with our labor groups. We'll be meeting with, we hold two board meetings a month, and we've been providing reports each board meeting for the last, since September. You can provide or you can get all of that information, and there's nothing difficult, hopefully, about this, but you can get this information on our website. So if you go to our district's website, we've created a link, and the central green link there, it says Diablo Canyon Closure Impact. If you click on that, you'll see these yellow boxes, and each of those yellow boxes has the report. So any updates that I might provide would be there, easy to find. Board reports, those that I told you about, those reports are all found on that particular link, and we are working on providing the video of the actual presentation on there as well. We're not quite there, but we will get there. The media has done a really good job of getting this information out there and doing, the Tribune ran an excellent series on how other communities across the country have managed the closure of their nuclear power plant and the impact it has had. So there's all these articles there as well. As we move along in this process, I envision us to continue to provide resources. And then, as we'll learn about tonight, our work with the Public Utilities Commission, any information that we have there, we'll link up to there. So our effort, our intention is to be intentional, to be transparent, and to be timely in providing the public, our community, with as best of the information that we have, and to provide you an opportunity to give us feedback. So tonight is really, once we speak about the context, create that framework, we're looking for your feedback. And that feedback will be captured by our assistant, Mrs. Holmes. And what we're intending to do is collect those comments, and just so you know, if I were to back this up, we've created a local leaders group representing each of our communities that represent our district, and there's about 18 to 20 people on that committee, and they're helping us make sense out of these ideas and these suggestions that you might have, or questions you might have. And then the idea is when we're done with these public forums, we'll revisit that with the local leaders group, and they'll help us sort of frame out core themes, which we're already seeing them develop. And then from there, we will come back to the community and continue to seek your input, but at least at that point, we'll have a much better concept of what your priorities, your interests, your concerns are. I'd like to just start, if I could, just by saying that I'm honored to be the superintendent of our school district. It is a wonderful, wonderful school district to lead. The schools, every single one of them is a special place. And the district as a whole has a rich tradition of, I believe, caring deeply about our kids and our community. We have high-performing schools in relation to the county and in relation to the state. Our students are successful, not just in the classroom, but outside of the classroom. More and more of our students are reaching out and giving back to their community. They're getting involved. Now, I attribute that to the other point, which is we have incredible parents in our community. Our communities that make up San Luis Coastal are incredibly giving and thoughtful communities, and the students that we get to educate reflect that generosity. We have, in my estimation, some of the best and brightest educators and administrators and support staff that I've ever seen in my profession in the field of education. We're super excited for that and most grateful. The other thing that we have that I'm super fortunate and grateful for is our revenue stream. We're here tonight because Diablo Canyon is going to close. When PG&E announced that in June of this summer, it was sort of a rainy day for me because all the things that we've been doing and working towards sort of came, in my mind, came to a halt, and I had to stop and make sense of what I just heard. Because the revenue stream that we've enjoyed for over three decades is about to come to a close in the next few years. So by 2024, 2025, PG&E announced that they will close down the plants, the two reactors. Each of those reactors generate unitary taxes for our district, for which we receive 38% of those taxes, to the tune of about $8 million. And we have sort of taken that for granted through the years. And now that the announcement has been made, we have to come to terms with that. So regardless of that loss in revenue, we can take that two different ways. We can take that, let's pack our bags and go home, or we can look at it as an opportunity to rethink, reimagine, and make the best of that situation. And that's my intention, is to start with you, begin to seek your input, your ideas. Despite what some people might think, we haven't made up our mind. We haven't. We don't have enough information. But what I am seeking is your ideas, your input, and your suggestions. We do have to make some hard decisions, no doubt, but at least we can start from hearing from you first. So despite these reductions in revenues that are going to come our way, we're still going to have a fantastic school district. So I'd like to talk to you about what we're currently doing. We, meaning the school board, when they heard the news, They convened a meeting in July of this last summer, and in that meeting they elected to seek intervener status with the California Public Utilities Commission. And the reason for that is that the joint proposal that was submitted by PG&E, the labor groups, and management did not include San Luis Coastal in that joint proposal. So the board decided to seek intervener status with the California Public Utilities Commission so that we would have a say, or at least an ability to speak our case in front of an administrative law judge at the hearings. Once we had done that, we began to collaborate and actually engage in negotiations with PG&E separate from that. And we continue to do that to this very day. In fact, I will say that the collaboration, I think, has been promising, and I'm looking forward to some sort of positive outcome. Depending on how it all works out, I will keep you posted. And what we do know is that we have to align our revenues with our expenditures. And as the plant depreciates over the next 9 years, we're going to lose our tax revenue, our unitary tax revenue. And so we have to assume that as that reduction in unitary tax revenue comes our way, we could fall prey to falling out of basic aid funded status. I will use simple terms. The way we're funded is, and Mr. Pinkerton will talk about this, is we receive all of the local property tax. It does not go to the state, and largely due to the revenue from PG&E, the nuclear power plant from Double Canyon. So we have to work hard at keeping our eye on that reality that we might lose significant funding status in the years to come. So we're developing a process as we speak. This is part of that process to reach out to our community and identify priorities, interests, so that we can begin the reduction process in part. So key points to keep in mind. The more that I do this, the more I realize that this is a we event. This is not something that I'm going to do in a back room. This is really part of a collective conversation because the scope of it is significant. $8 million of an $80 million budget is very, very significant. So while we try to negotiate with PG&E, while we try to look at alternative options, the reality is we have a significant issue in front of us. We've identified five areas that we believe make San Luis Coastal unique as a result of our funding. Mrs. McGrath will talk about that. And the one thing I really want to make a point of here is we also, by the good fortune of our community, passed November of 2014, we passed the facility bond measure, Measure D, $177 million facility bond. And that was designed and approved very specifically to modernize and improve our facilities, specifically our two high schools along with our elementaries. The important thing to note, because I would think these same thoughts, is, well, why don't we just use those resources to prevent reductions in the district as a whole at our local level? Well, the problem is you can't use those monies for salaries, programs. They're intended very specifically by virtue of the vote of the public, the way it was designed, to only be used for facility improvements. So I want to make that really clear. And once again, before I hand it off to Ms. McGrath, I'm proud to be here. I'm proud to be your superintendent. I know this will be a difficult journey, but it also can be an awakening as well, that maybe we'll come out of this with new ideas and new ways to think about how to run our schools. And so I'm looking forward to that dialogue.
Good evening. I have two different areas to cover with you. The first is we analyzed and looked at how has this revenue allowed us to do different things that you might see differently than other districts that are funded in a different format. We broke those down into five different areas, so I want to kind of go over those areas with you. One is professional development. Especially when it comes to teachers, we have had the opportunity to offer pretty incredible professional development, especially considering as Common Core came along and we had new standards to deal with. Our teachers have had a wealth of opportunities from some of the best, really in the nation to be able to improve their practice, to be able to work together collaboratively, and to help one another to grow professionally. Another area we look at is our programs and our services. So when you think about areas in things like counseling at all levels, mental health supports, parent education, technology, there's programs and services that we've been able to allow for our students that have helped to meet individual needs and to really help with a well-rounded student. So some of our funding has helped us to afford that as well. The third is salaries, benefits, and working conditions. We've been very fortunate that we're able to pay our employees well. We're able to recruit and retain some of the best around, just like Dr. Prater said, and we're glad that we've been able to do that and that gives an opportunity like that for our students. The next area that we found is class size. These funds have allowed us to keep class sizes low. When we look at averages, so of course you'll find exceptions here and there for different reasons, but when you look at averages, for example, in our K-3 classrooms, around 24-1. So even though legally we're allowed to have those class sizes larger, our funding has allowed us to keep those class sizes low. The last area is school size. So when you think about a district with approximately 7,500 students, to find 10 elementary schools, 2 middle schools, 2 comprehensive high schools, and a continuation high school, there's a lot of schools for that number of students. So that has allowed us, it's something that we value, that principals and staff members know their students and their family members and the community well, and the funding has allowed us to be able to do that. The second area I would like to cover with you is called our LCAP. These are basically, it's our accountability plan. These are the 6 focus areas, kind of our goals that we have within our district. And it's helpful if your comments can focus around either of these areas. So the 6 focus areas, the things that we're working on in our district, fall basically in these 6 categories. The first is mathematics. Second is English language arts and literacy. So when you think of literacy, we think of across all the subject areas. How are students becoming strong readers, writers, and strong in listening and speaking? STEAM is our third focus area, and this means science, technology, engineering, arts, and mathematics. Basically, when you think about this, it's how can we teach things in an interconnected way that is modern and that is helping kids to apply their knowledge and apply the information that they're learning. Number 4 is a culture of care, and this basically means that we're looking at a well-rounded whole student, right? That it's not just academics, but mental health and counseling and other supports that provide opportunities for students to create really a well-rounded student at the end. The 5th area, our focus area, is technology and innovation. So we're looking to continue to modernize what we do, to continue to use technology as a tool so that students are prepared for the college and career life that they choose after they leave us in high school. And then finally, our 6th focus area is the use of data. So we are looking at how can we use factual information in order to analyze how we're doing and in order to be targeted and specific about how we're improving. So when you think about what are the areas, the 5 areas that kind of have made us different because of the funding, and then our 6 focus areas, if you can focus your comments around those 2 categories, that's helpful to us as well. I'll hand it over to Mr. Pinkerton to explain the financial side.
Yeah, so all 3 of us actually came from state-funded districts prior to coming to San Luis Coastal, and which is a what's called a basic aid school district. And so probably the easiest analogy to look at that is if you had a water glass, property taxes for state-funded districts would fill that glass up about halfway, and then the state would come in and fill the glass up all the way. So that's how most districts in the state of California receive funding per pupil. For a basic aid school district, our property taxes overflow the glass. So we are, because of our property values, and specifically the fact that Diablo Canyon is within our attendance boundary, we receive extra unitary tax because of that, which is kind of what we're talking about, potentially losing those funds by 24-25. So it's really key in terms of that revenue stream has helped us to have all of those five things that Ms. McGrath talked about, as well as really enhanced programs, one-on-one here at Loam's, and a lot of just great things for kids. And so those are key aspects in terms of losing the revenue. So in terms of property tax in general and the property tax revenue itself, so it makes up about $65 million of our $80 million budget in terms of overall revenues. So we do receive some federal funds. We receive some other state funds. We receive local funds. But the core of our district and our revenue stream is through that basic aid funding, and specifically through property taxes. So secured, unsecured, as well as a little bit of what's called homeowner's tax makes up the core of our property tax values, and roughly $55 million are those basic taxes. So secured is homes, things that are secured to the ground. Unsecured is, you know, RVs, boats, things that are not secured. And so, again, that's the core part. But then, again, the unitary tax represents an extra over $10 million to the district each year. And because, specifically because it's within our attendance, as I said, we receive the amount of money that's specifically allocated through the unitary tax to Diablo Canyon. So with Diablo Canyon shutting down and talking to PG&E, and we're going off of their projections in terms of what we believe that amount to be, it runs anywhere from what we've seen, $7.7 million to $8 million. So that's the expectation, and that is the loss of those taxes, which is going to happen from now until the plant ceases to run. So the next page just kind of talks about what that looks like for us. So the plant initially doesn't close. It actually depreciates in value from now until 24-25, and we actually, county auditor just put out their first tax rates, and we're looking at between $500,000 and $700,000 as projected for this first year. So that's already starting this year. Actually, starting to hit us in 2017, and so it gradually grows in terms of that deficited amount from now until then. So we're currently working with PG&E and through that joint proposal to try to mitigate that and get some one-time funds to hopefully make up for some of those losses. That said, by 24-25, what we know is that those one-time funds and those unitary taxes are going to be gone. So it's an $8 million revenue hit that we're going to take due to the closure of the plant. The other point that we also need to make, and I think it's important, is that that unitary stream is reliant on the plant staying open. Now, PG&E, through the joint proposal, has said that they want to keep the plant open throughout that time. But there's nothing to say that for some unforeseen reason or something happens that the plant closes earlier than that. So whatever year that would be, that's where the $7.7 million hit would start at that point. So these are all reasons and things that we need to think about in terms of planning for the loss of revenue from now until 24-25. In terms of property tax history for everybody to know, on average, from 2002 until today, our average property tax increases is about 4.35%. Much of that can be attributed to the early 2000s, and anybody who bought a home during that time understands the value of homes and how much they rose during those times. And then when the recession hit about 2008, we actually had 4 years where property taxes were at 0% and even negative 1 year. So that's an average. This year, I think we're looking at about 3.89% based on that reduction in the unitary tax. Which, how that relates is basically that leaves us with about $9,500 per pupil if you take that unitary tax and you divide it by the number of students we have. Now, for state-funded districts, what they look at is what's called the local control funding formula, which kind of lays out. So it's more of in the 7,000 range per student. Now, they do receive funds for students that are economically disadvantaged, foster homeless youth, as well as EL students, which makes up what's called supplementary and concentration funds. But again, a stark difference. between our funding level and what a state level would be. So kind of just to end it, we are a people business as a school district. So 85 to 90% of our revenues, I think we're about 87% last year, is people. It's personnel costs. So when we look at an $8 million reduction, 87% of that is our people costs throughout the organization. And so that's the tough part in terms of when we look at making these reductions, what we have to do to get to that point. So those are just all things to consider. Again, by 2024-25, we are going to have an annual property tax loss of $8 million a year, ongoing. And so that's the hit that we have to kind of prepare for, and it's why we're, again, seeking your interest today to hopefully make the best decisions we can and do this in a way that, doesn't affect our students as little as possible.
Great. Thank you. Now it's your turn. It's a reminder that if you would like to speak, there's speaker forms in the back at the welcome table. Please fill it out with your name and what you're interested in speaking to. We have two microphones up here in front, and I'll call two at a time so that we can kind of keep things moving. We want to respect your time tonight and get you out of here in a reasonable amount of time. After all, it is a school night. And we want to make sure that everything moves fairly smoothly, as much as we possibly can. We have a timer to help you with judging your time. There's a box right there in the middle of the table with a green light and a red light. And the green light will go on. When you have 1 minute left, the green light will flash. And when you're out of time, if you could wrap it up, that means that you've taken 2 minutes. It what? Oh, it'll switch to yellow at 30 seconds. Wow, that's even better. So if you kind of keep your eye on that, then we'll keep the time going. If you go too long, I will ask you to wrap it up. We're asking you tonight to direct your comments and your questions and your ideas to the panel about the issue at hand, which is the closure of Diablo Canyon and the impact, the fiscal impact that it could have on the district and on the academic program of the district. Keep in mind, there are no bad ideas or stupid questions. Everything is on the table. Your ideas, your opinions, what you express tonight is welcome by the panel here and by the staff who is here too, and the trustees. We all want to hear what you think and what your ideas are. And that's really what this is all about tonight. So with that, let's go ahead and get started with Amy Higgins, followed by Heather Osgood.
Okay, so I may not have directly stuck with those because I didn't realize we were supposed to stick with those six, so I'll just read what I prepared. I'm a mother of a kinder and a third grader here in Los Osos, and I, too, went K through 12 in this district and specifically chose to move back when starting a family, in part because of our schools. Over the past few months, I've heard over and over again about the cuts that will need to be made. This troubles me because my K through 3 experience has already felt slim. Great teachers, yes, but extras, no. And this is in the Diablo era. For years now, the district has decided not to fund art programs, music for K through 3, and up until this year, science has been inconsequential, while the students and teachers spend a tremendous amount of time on the new math and writing curriculums. From my perspective as a K through 3 parent, the only thing left to cut from my child's day is quality time spent with their teacher. For this reason, I am up here to prioritize classroom sizes and hands-on learning when you begin to look at elementary schools. You cannot replace a teacher interaction with a Chromebook. And the more children you fit in the classroom, the less each child receives. And this directly affects all six of those LCAP goals. Teachers are required to adapt classrooms and teaching based on student need. They cannot and should not take a uniform approach. As was presented at last night's board meeting, when the district looks to increase class size, the district should not take a uniform approach and fall back on averages. To provide an equitable learning environment, decisions should be made on a variety of factors, including the number of 504s, IEPs, EL, and Title I students. Every school in our district should be able to shine, and I feel strongly about this. Two of our schools have become magnet schools. They are offering or perceived to offer what other schools are not. Throughout this process, the district should be working to make every school a magnet school so that parents don't feel like they need to move their children to another school because of missed opportunity. This tends to negatively affect the homeschool, as most of the children moved out of the home boundaries are not the socioeconomically disadvantaged and also tend to have the involved parents. I have accepted that cuts will happen. Before class sizes presented as an absolute, an internal demographic study should be done for transparency and a deeper understanding, not averages, but a thorough and thoughtful analysis. Additionally, our district should be compared to neighboring districts as it was for salary and benefits. Without this analysis, finally increasing class size averages for a district would be a huge disservice to our students. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Amy. Okay. Heather Osgood, followed by Sandra Saroff.
Hi, my name is Heather, and I have a TK and a third grader at Del Mar. And I just want to say thank you guys so much for all the information, because that was really helpful. And I don't have something quite as elaborately prepared, but I do want to say that I just want to reiterate everything that she just said. Class size is so important when we're talking especially about the younger students. And while, yes, Chromebooks are awesome, we really need to have smaller class sizes. And to me, that's the most important thing that I want to communicate, is that having that one-on-one teacher experience is so important and valuable to our students. So thank you.
Great. Thank you. Thank you. Sandra Sara, followed by Heather Mattson.
Hi. I won't be as eloquent, but thanks for planning so early in the process, and I really appreciate the idea of this collective consciousness and bringing the parents together. As I was telling people that I was coming tonight, some of the responses I got from parents were like, oh, glad you're going, give us an update. A lot of them felt as though the district was already going to do what they were going to do, so their input wasn't important, which of course I don't agree with because I'm here speaking, but that's what I hear a lot, so maybe something to address however you can within the community. I mean, I know our principal does a great job of trying to get the word out. I had a lot of things, but I guess I was really, to class sizes is a big deal for me. I have two kids at Baywood, and I had one that went through Monarch and has already graduated out of high school, and I've seen the difference of a class size of 20 versus 28 to 29, which is what my children have been having the past couple years, which is huge, and does have a great impact. There's in and outs that happen and all that, and I know it's dealt with, but class size is a big deal for me. I also feel the programs, the Family Resource Centers and the Family Advocates, that's a really important program, as well as the English Learner, because, of course, if children don't know where they're sleeping or where they're eating or they can't understand the language, then clearly who are we serving, and should be prioritized as well. And in terms of equity, I wonder, you know, as I was reading the board reports, I read that a plan wants to be adopted in January by the board to start these reductions within the next 3 years. And I guess I wonder, although I realize reductions are happening from taxes right away, what feels like that's a huge rush to try to get all this input. And I'm wondering, how is it that a really comprehensive and thorough plan can be developed by locale, really working from the ground up with each school? What are their needs? Because uniform across the board isn't going to work and isn't going to be equitable, because every school, I know what happens at Baywood, I don't know what happens everywhere else. Is that my beep? I'm done? Okay.
Great. Thank you.
That was it. Yeah.
Thank you. Heather Mattson, followed by Judy Neuhauser.
Hi, I'm Heather. My daughter Zoe goes to C.L. Smith, and at our first PTA meeting this year, we were asked to vote on whether we should cancel art in order to pay for air conditioning for a few of the classrooms that were getting up above the 90s during some of the hotter days. So I understand why this issue of funding is important to our schools, and I think we should try and get the best possible deal out of the joint proposal. I also think that the best possible deal is actually to keep the plant open. Please don't accept the joint proposal at face value. There are some details that may surprise some of you. First, PG&E is not agreeing to pay these one-time funds. The money comes from ratepayers. That's you and me and our community. Ratepayers are also funding the recovery of all capital spending on the plant, the employee retention and retraining programs, and all the costs spent on license renewal efforts so far, in addition to decommissioning. Second, there's no commitment to replace any of Diablo Canyon's power with other non-emitting sources. So, please consider that keeping Diablo Canyon open may actually be the best thing for the environment also, in addition to our community. In Upper New York, a couple plants were threatened by premature closure due to unfair market conditions. What did they do there? Their schools, their unions, their counties and cities all got together and rallied together to pressure their governor to change the policies that reward nuclear for its emissions-free nature. Nuclear is now part of New York's clean energy standard, and this is possible in California. PG&E states the main reason to abandon the plant in our community is due to California energy policy. We can and should be spending at least part of our effort to accomplish this change here, too. Thank you.
Thank you. Judy Neuhauser, followed by Jen Lertwachtrum.
Hi. It's great to be back. I love retirement, and it gives me some time to actually work on things. I'm really, I'd like to echo everything, especially the first speaker said. She was very eloquent, and I won't try and restate all that. I'm approaching comments on the assumption that we're really there to educate the kids, and so I would really ask that every single decision really be looked at is how does this directly affect our children? When we're talking classroom size, how does that affect our children? If we're talking cuts in administration, how does that affect the children? The other thing I'd like to talk about is if we as members of the public are really expected to make useful and practical solutions, we need some actual information. For input on class sizes, we need to know what the actual classroom numbers are for our elementary schools. You know, just as teachers differentiate, I would hope that the schools are differentiating also. So school by school, we'd like a list for some of our study groups. You know what, you don't have to give teachers, you don't have to give grade level, no identifying information, but how many students in this classroom, how many are SED, how many are EL, how many IEPs, how many 504s, and just, you know, a list for each school by school, so that we can take a look at what are the different schools dealing with on that. We're hoping that all programs, you're looking at all programs. Somebody mentioned Chromebooks in early elementary. I'd like to see the actual data, research data you're using on that, because my research data shows that those early elementary students need hands-on, multi-sensory science types of experiences, not Chromebooks, not computers. In fact, pediatricians are recommending that we really minimize the screen time on those very early childhood experiences. So I'd like to see you look at that. EL strategies. What EL strategies are actually working? Please analyze those within your community. Thank you.
Thank you. Jen Lertwachtrum, followed by Julie Tacker.
I'll preface this by saying I'm super cheap, naturally. I like to save money. And my first concern when this whole Diablo Canyon thing happened was that you actually hired a PR firm to deal with your constituents. I feel like that's in the purview of your responsibilities. And Mr. PR, I do think you're doing a great job. I do like this, but that was my first concern, is that someone was hired. I'm glad you're hiring someone to deal with PG&E because they're a big corporation. But your parents, your people, you deal with us. That was my first concern. If we're already starting off on this foot, it makes me a little concerned. The second is that I hope that the school board will ensure that the cuts made to classrooms and to teachers are also mirrored in cuts to administration and to any kind of higher-up people and whatever. I don't think it should just be cuts. And that's all we see, really, on your five-pronged list is how our kids are going to be affected. But you guys are going to be affected, too, most likely. And I hope that's the case because it shouldn't be below the line shrinking. It should be in all areas shrinking. Class size, I did a class size. I think it's super important. I have three kids, one at Teach, two at Baywood, one's in kindergarten. K through three class size needs to be small. There's no substitute for a small class size. Those kindergartners are rascally, squirrely. You don't know what you're getting in kindergarten, and they need small class sizes. Also, local leader committee, super interested in that. Never heard about it yet. How do you get on this local leader committee? Who chooses who gets to be on the local leader committee? And I do have a question. Who are the final people who make the decision? Is it the school board? Do you submit a proposal, and then the school board decides? Okay, so I think people need to know that. Thank you very much.
Great.
Thank you. Julie Tacker, followed by Maria Chisholm.
Good evening. I am Julie Tacker. I live in Los Osos and have since 1971 attended San Luis Coastal Schools. My children, San Luis Coastal Schools. My mother, Teacher of the Year, 1988, Baywood Elementary. This is the not if, but when moment that we've all been waiting for. That plant needs to close. It was never if it will close, but when it will close. Make no mistake, I want the plant closed. I want to see the district flourish. I want to see the district do what it can to reduce its reliability on Diablo Canyon, not only financially, but also in your resources. Rooftop solar, energy conservation. Be as frugal as you can with the resource as possible. We have to brace ourselves for a change, but the change was always going to come. I want to see interveners. I don't like that word. I like negotiator. I like that you can negotiate what's best for the district, but to intervene, and I've heard this, some of the cities are perhaps pushing to keep the plant open. That is not your role. Your role is to negotiate what's best for this district. What is the direct impact on the census of this district should the plant close? You will lose families who are employed by the plant. Maybe there's a reduction realized because those families will not be here anymore. I want to see, when we're talking about property tax, we are in an upward trend. What does that look like? As your numbers are falling, that number is climbing. We need the fair analysis that shows when do they meet? That's only fair. We are to wean ourselves. The program shows you're weaning yourself. They're weaning us from the reliability on the finances. Tap our community resources. We have Cal Poly. We have Cuesta College. We have bright people in this county. And to not have this conversation at this time, we need to have it at the same time in how those hubs of information, hubs of bright, beautiful people, how they can help our children into the future and how this district will go forward.
Thank you. Maria Chisholm, followed by Becky Weiss.
I'm a parent of a Monarch Grove kindergartner and second grader, and I was just hoping for more information on your committees, specifically who are they and are they being paid, and is the district paying for consultants from outside the district to help us make our decisions? And then I also want to echo some previous comments, just that I'm hoping that when you guys are considering cuts, that you do remember that the most important thing for our children is not technology. I know we pride ourselves on the technology in our district, but the teachers are the most important, and our kindergartners need more attention from the teachers, not from books. Thank you.
Thank you. Becky Weiss, followed by Kristen Zaitz.
Hi. I first want to just thank you for having us. It's a wonderful thing. I have a third grader and a first grader at Monarch Grove. I was at last night's meeting, the board meeting. The message was clear that the class size will increase. Monarch Grove is our home school. It's a Title I school. Our district has two alternative magnet schools that directly impact our coastal schools. Equal class size does not mean equitable classes, period. Therefore, on the behalf of our parents, I am requesting an internal demographic study that shows classroom size breakdowns, including information on students classified as AL and SED, or having IEPs and 504s. We need specific numbers class by class in order to form equitable classrooms for all our children. The public needs access to this information in order to give informed input about our classrooms and the closure of Diablo. I'm curious to how this information will be accessible to the public and when it can be expected. I also just want to agree with the technology versus hands-on. Teachers are so important. Hands-on is so important, and especially K through 3. We cram our classroom size, which my son has, and I came to fight 2 years ago for classroom size in front of you all. It makes a huge impact on the achievement of our children. And so thank you for your time and consideration of this most important request, as we all know, will significantly impact our children and their futures. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Kristen Zaitz, followed by Becca Banfield.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for holding this forum. I'm a mom of two, and I have a first grader at Pacheco. He's right now plugged into the matrix so that we can get through this meeting, but I agree that I don't want that for his classroom experience. So we've heard that the economics are going to be very bad, and I agree. I've looked at them myself. They are going to be very bad. And I appreciate, Dr. Prater, that you've looked at what's happened to other nuclear plants around the country. We've had a lot of examples of plant closures and what happens to the community. And so while I appreciate the optimism, because why not, right? We do need to admit that there's some tough times coming. Cuts will be painful, but if you're faced with missing out on $8 million, something's got to go. This is not just going to affect San Luis Coastal. It will affect the whole community. So I went to the Los Osos Middle School discussion last week, which was also great. There were a lot of great brainstorm, really creative ideas thrown out there, and I like hearing those. But I think we all should keep in mind that the plant doesn't just affect your tax dollars. It also affects the whole local community. There's going to be people losing their jobs. A 2013 study out of Cal Poly showed that for every job at Diablo Canyon, more than one job in the local community is created. So what happens to all those jobs? And those are the people that are supporting our PTAs. Those are the people that are also supporting local nonprofits. I heard a lot of ideas that we can just lean on local nonprofits to help our school district. They're going to be impacted too. We're all going to be dealing with a shortfall of finances. I started with Heather Madison, Mothers for Nuclear, earlier this year when we learned that plants around the country were being closed prematurely and being replaced by fossil fuels. We fear that this will also happen here. Although this is not the subject of this meeting, I'm happy to talk to anyone here or you more about why we're concerned about the premature closure of existing nuclear plants. That being said, you guys are interveners with the CPUC, and I urge you not to accept the false dilemma that's being presented to you. I know you're big into critical thinking in San Luis Coastal. So a false dilemma is when you're offered two possible options, or your possible options are defined for you, and you don't see what the other possible option might be. The other possible option is keeping the plant operating, which is the best thing for our community, for our children, for our environment, for our future. Thank you.
Thank you. Becca Banfield, followed by Leah Bodili.
Hi, I just want to voice support for that comment just made too, of that option of perhaps rallying together and finding a way, if possible, to help Diablo stay alive. I really have a question. I know there's a committee discussing cuts and organizing the discussion, the suggestions from the community members. Is there any committee discussing possible action to generate revenue? I know a lot of that focus needs to be on cuts right now and that possibility, but if there is, who is involved in that and where can I sign up?
Thank you. Leah Bodili, followed by John Lindsay.
So I find it kind of funny that I'm up here talking about a nuclear power plant that my parents and my oldest sister chained themselves to the front of it so that they would never open. So it's kind of crazy that it's closing. I guess I want to just reiterate the what was previously spoken to about classroom size. I feel like classroom size is so important, especially for these really young grades. I have a kindergartner at Monarch Grove right now, and I feel like he's having a good experience with the classroom size that he has, but I feel like it's big as it is right now, and I'm concerned because I'm thinking if right now we're in our flourishing time where we have all this money and we have large classrooms, what is going to happen when you try and raise the classroom size? And I know that you mentioned what was to the legal amount, and I'm wondering what is the legal amount or what is the number that you're considering increasing the classroom sizes to? And then when you go through the LCAP goals that you have, how can you possibly keep any of those goals when you've increased the classroom size to what's the legal amount? And so I hope you really consider that. And also, I was wondering about becoming a local leader, too, because that sounds like, so if there's information on how to join that, that would be great, too. Thank you.
Thank you. Just a reminder that if you'd like to speak, and we encourage you to, please get a speaker's form at the back table, the welcome table, and put your name on it and bring it on up, and we'll be glad to hear from you. Our next speaker is John Lindsay, followed by Jeff Steen. Okay. So, Jeff Steen. Jeff, are you here?
Gee, well, yeah, I'm here. I just was waiting for John to talk. But
So I'd like to echo, there's been plenty of great comments that I don't need to repeat. You've heard them. But one of the things that comes to mind is there was a lot of questions asked tonight, not comments made, and we didn't hear any answers. So obviously we don't expect you to answer all of them sitting up there right now, although a couple of them were pretty easy. We could have. When will we actually hear answers to all those questions? And I'm going to add a few more. You laid out all the things we're great at, small class size. Give me data. How much smaller are we than all the averages in the area? What implication does that have? We have great professional development. So what? What does it consist of? How much does it cost? How do we compare to others? And what's the implication if that changes? We need to understand those things so that we can help weigh in on decisions. So we really want to know, I'm sure everybody around here that had those questions want to know when they're going to hear the answers.
Thank you. Scott Therian, followed by Melissa Angel.
But there's been a real good conversation. I first want to thank you guys all for being here and filling us in. I'm sure it's not easy sitting here getting beat up by us, and I really believe you guys have all our best interest at heart. I really want to echo the class size thing. I think it's been pretty clear. We all really care about class size. It's huge to all of us. But I did want to speak for the Chromebook. I actually really like the Chromebook. I think it's important that our kids need computer literacy, and they need to know it's not just for playing apps, that it's an actual useful tool. I think it's critical for our kids growing up today. So thanks for that. You know, what I really hope that you guys will focus on what I want to ask you to do is plan for cuts, but fight for revenue. You know, we're all sitting here talking about how to deal with the cuts. Like, you need to make the fight for the revenue. I'm really glad to hear you guys got the intervener status. I hope that you'll make the case that the depreciation is unfair. I want you to make a case that it's socially irresponsible for PG&E to come in, build this whole thing up, build a community on it, and then just drop out and pretend like the value has no, or the land value can just drop like that. The two things I thought of that you might fight for is, first off, the taxation for waste storage. As I think most of us know, when they close down, that waste isn't going anywhere. So we, the community, are left shouldering this nuclear waste just sitting here. There is an impact to us for that. And for PG&E to just drop out and leave the community holding that is completely unfair. The other thing I think you might fight for is a commitment for them to replace that with renewable energy. I mean, there's a big swath of land that, because of the nuclear storage, can't be used for anything. It could be used to house a solar farm, offshore wind. There's a lot of options there. So I'm hoping, I don't know how much reach you guys have in that intervener status, but I hope you'll make that fight. Keep the revenue coming. Let's plan for cuts, but let's get the revenue back, too. Thanks.
Thank you. Melissa Angel, followed by Becky Wells.
Hi. I I have two fantastic middle school students getting a fantastic education here at Los Osos Middle School. I'm a kindergarten teacher myself, so I want to say that I totally reiterate the class size for K-3 being so important. But as a parent of middle grade going into high school students, I felt that I had to just stand up and say that I'm concerned about the equity at the high school, the offerings, including AP courses, language, and things like that that might be offered at the high school. So that's kind of where I'm going, even though my kids might not see the brunt of the cuts. I worry about future high school students and preparing them in all the wonderful ways that we can to be prepared for college and have a well-rounded education. So thank you.
Great. Thank you. Becky Wells.
Hi there, me again. Sorry. There is one really important thing that I want to bring to your attention, and I hope you all, someone could answer that for us. There's a lot of rumors going around about school closures, and I've heard a lot of rumors about our coastal schools. Baywood closing, coming to Monarch perhaps, and I would really like to know your thoughts on that tonight, if that is a consideration, if that's a possibility, if it's a rumor. I would like to know about, Baywood closing. Thank you.
Thank you. Jane Kennedy, it's the last card I have. If you'd like to speak, please fill out a card and bring it up.
Okay, my daughters have both graduated from Morro Bay High School, and my son is currently a junior. And I would, my kids were lucky enough to go through K-3 while you had those grades limited to 20 students per classroom. And I would like to add my voice to the people who are talking about class size. I recognize that because their classrooms were limited to 20, they had an excellent start in life. And the fact that you're now telling me these classrooms are 24, 25, 26, even in kindergarten, to me, that's actually really sad because I thought 20 was still a lot. The other thing that I'd like to mention is, and I'm not really talking to you because I have already talked to you about this, but to everybody else, my son is an 11th grader. He's a straight A student, and he has already taken classes at Cuesta. This is a program that other school districts run. They send their seniors to spend half the day over at the junior college where they not only pick up their high school credits, but they also get college credits. So when they get into college, they already have units. They're graduating college in 3 years instead of two, saving money. And it's just a very valuable, they're much more likely to graduate from college when they do this as well. This is a very valuable program that is actually cheaper for the high school than if they had the students on campus all day because you're not providing teachers for them. And I would encourage for us to look at other school districts. There's a school district, Paradise, California, runs one of these programs where they have their high school students. They take select high school students, not all of them, but select high school students. They have them come to high school in the morning, and then they bus them to the community college to take classes there. There are other high school programs where the kids take so many classes that they actually graduate with their AA degree as they're graduating from high school, and they're transferring into college as juniors. These are, I think, programs that we could do here, would be very valuable for so many of our very high-achieving students that we have in high school, and would reduce the cost of the high schools to educate these kids because they'll be over at Cuesta taking classes there instead. And I would like to offer my son as the guinea pig so that he would like to take most of his classes at Cuesta next year, and I've been talking to you about that, so I'm sure we'll talk more. But I think that would be an excellent cost-saving thing, and I think that there's certain students that would be valuable for and certain students not. That's something that obviously it's a program to look at, but it could give significant cost savings to the district.
Great, thank you. I have one more card from Jen Derby.
That's my maiden name. It's easier to pronounce. Just one thought that I forgot to mention, grants. We have a lot of neat things going on that are funded because of the Avila money, the Diablo Canyon money. But I know that a lot of the basic aid districts can pull in grants, even into the millions of dollars, to support different programs and different initiatives in their school district. I think we have a lot of, like Teach Pacheco, a lot of exciting programs in the school. And maybe I don't know if we have a grant writer or someone who actively searches for grants, big grants. Maybe we haven't needed to up to this point. But as what Becca Banfield said, that should also be on the forefront of increasing revenue, is seeing, I don't know if that's a part of the district. It's so hard talking to a blank slate, like, I don't know. But so grants would be great. Grants that other basic aid districts get and that supplement into the millions of dollars. Thanks.
Great. Thank you. Thank you. There has been a couple of questions that have come up. By the way, I don't have any more cards, but we've had a couple of questions come up along the way. I wondered if any of you wanted to address them.
Okay, I didn't catch all the names, but I did furiously use my critical thinking skills, and I synthesized as quickly as I could from 3 pages to 8 points. Okay, I might have missed something. I may have, but let me try to. My tendency is to want to respond to every one of you, like right on the spot. But I think this process allows me to kind of hear everything and then begin my sort of response to that. So these are the things that I heard. Class size is very important, and you had questions about providing some sort of a detailed analysis of what the school-by-school analysis is. What I can tell you is, before I get going on that, I have it right here in front of me. We work with this very closely, and so that's a very easy thing to provide, and it's actually very interesting. And I think it's public, and it's very worthwhile to look at, and I will provide that. I'll get back to this in a moment. The second point I heard was, how were the local leader group committee, how was that formed and who did the selection on that? As well as really a broader question is, who's making these decisions? And I want in, you know, that kind of thing. I also heard, why are you paying for consultants for such a thing when we do work so closely with each other anyway? And I think I can respond to that.
Can you write grants?
Well, hold on. Let me just... this might be a reason why I have him, but there we go. and then the 5 things that Ms. McGrath... those aren't entirely conclusive, or it doesn't embrace everything, but it generally talks to the 5 things. What it doesn't include is the discussion about reductions of administration, support staff, and so forth. And I will talk about that, because I spent about 4 hours today with my team going through that. So it's fresh in my mind, and I'll be happy to talk to you. And then rumors, that's always a fun one, because when you hear the rumors, I hear the rumors. So I'll be happy to talk about that. This is a wonderful opportunity to do that. The idea of reductions versus revenues, or fighting for the revenues, plan for the reductions. And I think that's a very insightful comment the gentleman made. And allowing our district to flourish despite weaning ourselves from Diablo Canyon and yet still flourishing using existing resources in our community is a very thoughtful and provocative comment. And then finally, what I have is... the idea of high school programs, whether it be looking at alternative mechanisms or providing additional options and opportunities for kids, especially with Measure D, and we're modernizing our high schools at this very time. So these are important things that we live with. So let me just really quickly begin. Classroom class size analysis. What I will do for each of these is I'll put together just a recap of this evening. Once I get the minutes and I really have a chance to kind of evaluate this, I'll put together a white paper, just a response to these things, and I will summarize them to the best of my abilities so that not just you have it, but up on the website and everybody can have it. Okay, so we're completely open and transparent. Okay, there was some, I will say, there were some... I think underneath some of the comments, I think there's a tendency for people and parents, and I'm a parent too, by the way, to sort of question things. But only through their own lens. And so we have many lenses that we look through. And so I realize class size is very important. So I will have that. I'd like to talk to you really quickly about the local leader group and how that came about, and the public forum idea. And when Diablo Canyon first came about, meaning the closure announcement, what I did was I dug in fairly deeply and started thinking about what is it that we're going to do? How are we going to wrestle with this and make sense of it? It was a pretty scary time this summer, trying to make sense of what this all means. So I reached out to former superintendents in this district, as well as existing superintendents throughout the state, and I met with them along with my cabinet team, and I asked them, here's the problem, much like you heard tonight, what do you think we should do? How should we go about this? Where do I begin? And what came out of that meeting was really a full day meeting. Really what came out of that meeting was process. Was you got to make tough decisions, but you got to establish a process. And so we spent some time, I spent a lot of time reflecting on what that process looks like. So what I knew is I needed to come out to the public and reach out and get you as much information as I could. And identify and harvest your interests. What came out tonight, loud and clear, were interests. You had some questions, but really they're interests. And that's very important, okay, for me to know about. So gathering those interests is essential. The second piece is the local leader group. The local leader group was really my own creation. I sat with Mrs. Holmes. I had worked with Dave and Maggie Cox for our Measure D bond campaign. And I knew the work, the good work that they did. And I just said, look, I'd like to identify 18 to 20 people in our community that that are respected, that know education, that have sort of a solid footing in our community. And they're not paid. This isn't a pay-for kind of deal. We met a few weeks ago, in fact. We reached out to them and said, would you be willing to hear our story and then provide us with some ideas. So just like we are here, but in a smaller scale. And the ideas and the interest that we heard, by and large, were like the gentleman that came up, were almost exclusively, let's not look at this as reductions, let's look at this as finding a way to generate alternative revenue. And so pumping that idea. They agreed for a two-meeting commitment. The first meeting was to generate sort of these basic ideas. In between the first meeting and the second meeting, I'm doing these public forums. I'm circling back. And by the way, these names on the local committee, all I did was I reached out to them, emailed them, said, would you be willing to help? They said, sure. And we met. And that's kind of how that is. And then we're meeting once again in late November. Once we gather all this information, and once again, we'll synthesize it. No decision, just channeling common core themes. The other thing I'm going to do, and this is, you might think that I'm over-committing this process, but I'm going to identify, or try to seek to identify, 8 to 10 people in our community who would be willing to sit on a blue ribbon committee. Basically, I'm stealing a model that they use in larger districts, but to tackle very complex problems. And basically, the intent is I'll give them all this feedback, all your interests, all our financial data, everything that we have, and we will meet with them for 6 months, 1 month at a time, and have them, separate from me, go through this process. The reason for a consultant is that it separates me because I have a vested interest. So I'm trying to separate myself from some of these decision points so that they're more objective, they're not skewed in any way, so that 10 independent minds can look at the same things we're all looking at with these interests identified, saying, okay, how should we go about this? Now, you might say, well, who are those 8 to 10 people? Well, I don't know yet. I'm still coming up with that process. Then that committee will then make a series of recommendations. That'll happen sometime in June or July. While that's going on, we're going to approve a demographic analysis, and that demographic analysis has to do with collecting data on where our community is going. In other words, in terms of development, in terms of growth, where are the families living? It might be this way now, but if you go to San Luis, you'll see a lot of construction going on in certain spots in town, mostly in the south part of town. And we need to get a good handle on that data. What will our town look like in 5 years, 10 years? And so we need to gather that data. What will Los Osos, what will Morro Bay look like in 5 to 10 to 15 years? And there are companies out there that specialize in that data. That's a critical piece of information I simply don't have. Additionally, I'd like to talk about this idea of the rumors, which are connected to the demographic study. So it has to do with school closures, which I know people have jumped right to because one of the five things is small school sizes. So one of the things that I'm not convinced of, just simply not convinced that it will pan out economically for us, is the idea of closing schools. I don't have enough information, but what I can tell you is while we have small schools, the laws in California have changed to become very pro-charter. So when we go about considering closing schools, and this is tied to the funding model, so at some point we believe we're going to fall out of basic aid funding status and become a state-funded school district. So while we're a basic aid-funded school district, we benefit financially when we have fewer students. A lot of people don't realize that. It took me a while to get my mind around it. But as a basic aid-funded school district, the fewer students we have, the more money we have going to each student. Okay. However, when the plan is depreciated, at some point we believe we will fall out of that funding model, which means now we're going to shift from a constricted model, declining interdistrict transfers model, to we need to grow as a district model. So therein lies the dilemma, if you will. So these are the things we need data on. So at this point, I can unequivocally tell you that we don't have enough information to discern whether or not schools will be closed. What I can tell you is I'm not prepared to say that because we just don't have enough information. And again, I'm not convinced when the day comes that we're no longer a community-funded or basic aid-funded school district and we're now an ADA-funded school district, meaning the more kids we have, the more money we have to provide programs and do things, then at that point, we're going to be trying to attract kids to our communities, to our schools, and you're going to see a whole other model emerge. Reductions versus revenues, the gentleman that came up here said it the best. Plan for the reductions, but work towards raising revenues, and that's exactly what we're trying to do. And then the high school programs, we're well aware of that. When 87% of our budget's in people, and we, as I said last night at the board meeting, most of our money is in the classroom, as it should be, with teachers, with kids. That's where the majority of our money is. When you lose $8 million, it's going to impact that classroom. There's no doubt about it. So we've got to find a way to minimize that impact. So that's the creative work that we're trying to do. And then finally, that one point about administration and, you know, starting your cuts farthest from the classroom. Well, that's exactly what we plan on doing. So in my attempt to be completely forthright and transparent, I put out on the website a template for all these forums and when I was planning on bringing things to the board. Well, one of those was in January. I said I was going to make a multi-year recommendation to the board. Well, since then and since all this has taken place, what I will be bringing to the board in January really is reductions at the district office level. So we're going to start farthest away from the classroom. We're going to squeeze there. I was doing that this afternoon with my team, and I realized just like I said at the last forum, make no mistake, there will be an initial applause, like, yes, way to go. And then the reality will set in that those things that are going on at the district level through professional development, through supporting school principals and sites, the classroom, all of those things are either going to come to a stop or they're going to be transitioned away from the district office because there won't be anyone there to do it. So there will be a transference. Now, I can say this to you because I've lived it as a site principal before in a former life. In 2001, there was the dot-com bubble burst, and I was in the town of Brentwood, and I was a middle school principal, and I was informed I was going to lose an assistant principal, a counselor, and a secretary, and our class sizes were going up. That's how I was informed. That's what was going to happen. But what ended up really happening is that we all felt it. All of those district-level reductions, those things that we do are very important. It's just we don't talk about it. When they come to the site, we try our best to keep most of that as we can, much of that, away from burdening the site. Well, when those things are no longer, we're no longer able to do that, it becomes a real challenge at the site level. I know because I did it. And I've done that. So we're trying really hard to do this wisely, figure out what we can no longer do, figure out what we still need to do, but do it a little differently. And so those are the things that are going through my mind as we approach January and collect all this info. We're not going to be prepared to make any other types of decisions or reductions, whether it be class size or whether it be site reductions until at least another year. So this outreach is going to last. It's going to be, I'll be back with you again, I'm sure. So I think I answered all those questions.
Great. Thank you. Thanks very much. And thank you for your invaluable input. You can see the kind of conversation it stimulated. There's two or one more of these meetings scheduled for next week in Morro Bay. You're welcome to attend that as well. Ms. Holmes has been keeping copious notes here on everything that's been talked about tonight. That will be posted to the website along with, I'm guessing, your white paper that you're talking about. And that's at slcusd.org. Be sure to, if you need more information, that's a good place.